Welcome into the 22nd episode of the Great American Hockey Show podcast. It's going to be a good one for you today. We have former Bruins defenseman Aaron Ward, who is never afraid to give his opinions about anything. He'll give us some news and some insight into the Tuukka Rask injury, among a lot of different stuff. And we're going to have my buddy and co-pilot Jimmy Murphy along with me to talk Bruins and this rough stretch that they're in right now. So without further ado, let's start the show and hit him with the hein! Did you like that, Murph? All right, let's start the show. Welcome into the Great American Hockey Show. Your host, Joe Haggerty, the Bruins insider here at CSN New England. And with me, as always, is my friend Jimmy Murphy from ESPN New Hampshire, host of the Stretch Run on that air. Murph, what's going on, man? These Bruins are in a bad way right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we kind of knew we were in for a roller coaster with this current squad. It would be much like last season, but I don't think anybody, if you were trying to script a horror movie for Halloween, this is pretty much it as far as the Bruins go. I don't think anybody could have scripted it as horror-like as this. No goalies. The defense is a mess as expected. But even worse is they can't score. And I think you put all those things together right now, and, you know, by the Thanksgiving holiday in America, the Bruins could very well be out of it.
Yeah, and, you know, I've said this a few times, and it's a very old hockey credo, at least from the last 10, 20 years. You cannot win the Cup in October and November, but you can certainly knock yourself out of contention for it by playing so badly that you're so far out of the playoff race come Thanksgiving time that it doesn't matter. And I think the Bruins are entering that territory, given the situation in goal, given the situation on defense in front of the goaltenders. You know, even the game against the Rangers, they got some offense early, right? They scored two goals. They finally scored the first goal of the game for the first time in seven games, but it just can't hold. You know, they don't have the goaltending and the defense right now to hold down another team even when they do score, and I agree they need balanced scoring, but, you know, right now at this point, Torrey Krug is not playing like he should and does not look like himself. Adam McQuaid has been a Halloween-style horror show, as you said, for the two games that he's been back. Really, everybody outside of that top pairing of Zdeno Chara and Brandon Carlo on defense has been a complete liability so far and has had some really bad moments. And you saw that again against the Rangers. And when you have two young goaltenders that have their flaws, that have their learning curve, and have their things they're trying to figure out, and certainly their psyches are fragile, you can't have a defense playing in front of them like they are right now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I mean, you can, the Claude Julien bashers are already coming out. And they can bash Claude Julien all they want and live in that false agenda. Look, is Claude a perfect coach? Has Claude made mistakes over the year that maybe warranted him to be relieved of his duties? Yeah, probably. But right now, as we sit in this current state, this isn't Claude Julien's fault. This is all about the personnel that was put on the ice, the lack of depth in that personnel, and then also about the players executing the systems that are in plan. And I think that right now, you know, I know he was hurt to start the season, but Patrice Bergeron is not himself either right now. And I think he needs to step it up a bit out there. I don't think this is by any means his fault, but these are the type of times when they need a guy like Bergeron to really, grab the bull by the horns and run with it.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that the Bergeron, Marchand, Pasternak line is the only one that's worth a damn right now and the only one other teams are worried about. So they're so focused on stopping them that they can neutralize them more times than not and just, you know, dare the other lines to beat them, which they have not been able to do. And, you know, David Krejci is nowhere close to when he's at his best. And that line without David Backes does next to nothing right now. You know, they did get the goal from Zarnik last night, but that's the only thing that they've really produced in the first seven games of the season. To what you say about Claude Julien, I agree it's not fair. There are a lot of horrendous injuries right now, a lot of misfortune befalling this Bruins team. But, you know, when your owner comes out on media day and says, I expect the playoffs and I expect a deep run, And if they go all of a sudden down a sinkhole and lose 6, 7, 8 games in a row in October or November, somebody is going to pay the price at that point. And the coach is the most convenient one to do it. And
exactly.
I really feel like this has been set up all the time for Claude to get the fall and for Bruce Cassidy to potentially take over. And it's really playing out that way, potentially, with the way the goalies are, with Backes now being out after he had his elbow dealt with, and all these other players executing at a much lower level than they're used to.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, you know, it's not Claude's fault, but it's very likely that if somebody is going to pay the price, it's him. Because, you know, the thing is the Bruins didn't build this team to win. Jeremy Jacobs can go up there and say what he expects, all he wants, but his management team of Cam Neely and Don Sweeney did not build this squad to make a deep run into the playoffs. They built this squad to compete, but at the same time build towards the future. And that's what they'll probably end up doing, Joe. I mean, do I think the Bruins are going to be, you know, finishing dead last because of this start? No, I think, you know, along the way, guys will get healthy, things will come together, they'll go on a nice stretch, and then they'll likely choke down the stretch run, you know, and that's what they did last year and the year before. It will just keep going that way because right now the Bruins are stuck in this mediocrity state. And I think, you know, you look right now as far as the goaltending goes, there's nobody out there. They're not going to go out and pick up Pavlik from Winnipeg right now and take on that salary. It just wouldn't make sense. So they're stuck with what they have and maybe somebody they get off the scrap heap, but there's nobody that's going to come in and be a guy you can go to every day to depend on until Tuukka Rask is healthy. And who knows when that's going to be. We don't know what's wrong with Tuukka. I mean, chances are something happened at the World Cup. They're never going to say that, but you would imagine it's not. I mean, from all accounts, it seems to maybe be a groin pull or something to that degree, and that's not good for a goalie. So, I mean, for the next couple of weeks, this is what you're going to get.
Yeah, and maybe there's a guy like Kari Rahmo or somebody like that out there. That was a name I'd heard tossed about, and I hadn't looked in to see if he was actually available. He may be, but there might be a guy like that that you could potentially throw in as a stopgap, but that's still not addressing the situation. Last topic here, Murph, Malcolm Subban, I think he's a first-round bust. I've seen 2 games at the NHL level. I've seen 7 or 8 games at least at the AHL level. I've seen preseason games with Malcolm Subban. I think I've seen him play well once in those 10, 12 times when I've watched him play. I just don't think he's got the technique, the glove hand, and he just doesn't have any of the stuff that you need, whether it's makeup-wise or technically-wise, to make it in the NHL. I just don't think he's an NHL goalie.
Yeah, you know what? I think, you know, he could eventually be a backup somewhere. I don't want to be too hard on him, but I'm with you. I mean, look, it's not his fault he was drafting in the first round, right? I mean, I agree. I think we go back to that day. I remember talking to you that day.
We were stunned.
We were stunned. I mean, we actually thought, are they doing this just to stick it to the Canadians and PK Subban? Are they like, is this something just to, you know, we're just going to have fun here? But, I mean, it's a first round pick. You don't mess with a first round pick in today's NHL. You get the best guy you can in the first round, and that was not the best guy. And Malcolm Subban, you look at him, he wasn't a goalie all his life. He switched over later in life, and I think he's still in that transition. I really do. I mean, I think he, even though he's at the pro ranks right now, he still seems to be learning the position. And you can't have a guy on your team in the NHL that's learning the position. He has to know that position already and then work on it and improve it as he's there. But this was just a mess from the get-go, and you know, I kind of feel for him because I think he, like Claude Julien, was put in a position to fail. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, but at this point, he's a fourth-year pro. He needs to be a finished product at 22 years old, a former first-round pick, even if he was late to the position. Other guys in his draft class, whether it's Andre Vasilevskiy, who was drafted in front of him, or guys that were drafted behind him, Connor Hellebuck, Jonas Korpisalo, Freddie Anderson, you go down the list, Matt Murray, who won the Stanley Cup. You go down the list, all these other players that are in his draft class are all contributing in the NHL and proving that they belong there. He's not doing it, and I just think he's not doing it because he's not an NHL goalie. You know, that'll be something that plays out over the next couple of weeks as they wait for Tuukka Rask to come back. I've heard that they want to try to push him to be ready this weekend against the Detroit Red Wings. I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not. It might be out of necessity, and that could really backfire on them if he completely blows out whatever's wrong with him. But that'll be a criticism for another another day, Murph. Let's go to the interview.
And Joe, quickly, before you say, you know, that Malcolm Subban, you know, isn't a finished product. They already got one finished product between the pipes, and that's not going well, right?
This is true. with that, let's move on to your friend and mine, Murph, Aaron Ward, in a little sit-down we have.
Wardo.
Yeah, we'll bring it in NHL defenseman, Bruins, former Bruins defenseman, Aaron Ward, 839 games in the NHL, Stanley Cup winner in 2005-06 with the Carolina Hurricanes. Wardo, great to have you. I always enjoyed working with you in Boston when you were with the Bruins. When you think now about your time in Boston, you spent 3 years there, what are the memories that come to mind, the feeling that comes to mind the most?
Well, I always talk about Boston as the city that I most enjoyed playing hockey in, where we didn't win. And when I say I qualify not winning, I'm talking about not winning the Stanley Cup while my time was there. I think you take a reflective look back and realize that was pretty rapid ascension by the standards of the National Hockey League. You know, I first got there, I got traded, I think somewhere around late February. When I got the lineup, you know, you knew the regulars like Murray and Chara, but you looked around the lineup in the locker room, and you started to realize that we were pretty thin talent-wise on that team. We didn't have a whole lot there, and it should say a lot when you start looking around and realize that Chistov was our number one centerman that year. You know that you're falling off pretty quick. So, you know, Timmy Thomas was kind of emerging at that time and creating the reputation for himself. He was in that me against the world mentality. And so he was pretty good on a really bad team. And for us to kind of get to where we were so quickly, you know, the next season where people gave us no chance, making the playoffs, taking Montreal to 7, that was, I would say, the stepping stone for the next year where we had an identity. We kind of got back to being the big bad Bruins. We always had Z, who you knew could step up and enforce. But as a team tough component, that took a little time over those 2 years. And we adopted the Claude Julien mentality of playing the game the right way. So I just got to say that playing in Boston and seeing along with the fans, the Bruins kind of regain the lore that was being a Bruin. Seeing Johnny Busick go from simply a guy that worked with the organization and you respected him to him having a clear investment and a desire to be around the players and enjoyment of watching these games. I mean, I loved my time in Boston.
Could you tell during your time there and you're building up and things are coming together? I mean, could you tell that there was that unique combination that you need, the chemistry, the players, all that stuff coming together, that they were eventually going to win the cup? Did you get the feeling like they were on the track that was going to happen?
Well, absolutely. You know, it took on, you know, sometimes you're always trying to battle to be a certain type of team. And they were quickly under Shirelli able to assemble the kind of, again, I keep going back to identity of the big bad Bruins, but there was still a quality element of skill on that team. You had a good balance of youth. I think we had a great balance of youth. I mean, that was your Milan Lucic came in, and we had so many guys that had a lot to prove. And we had some young guys like Krejci came in, and we're like, you know, the guy's a buck 20 wet. And we're like, what does this guy do? And then all of a sudden you see him on the ice, and it's like, good God, let him go. And you had the chemistry between Savard and Kessel. So, you could see it. You could see it ever emerging. And you could see that, you know, I was disappointed. I remember doing the PR for the Fenway game, and I got on NHL Network and talked how great it was. And the guy says, "Well, you got to be so excited to play the game." I said, "Well, don't jinx me now. There's still a lot of time." And sure enough, 3 days later, I'm on a golf course in North Carolina, and I get traded. So, you know, that was kind of the moment where I left. But I still have a good loyalty to the Boston Bruins and the team, and I keep a special eye on what they do.
What was Phil like as a young player? I had heard things like, you know, maybe he wasn't, you know, a popular guy in the room, or he was kind of like didn't talk much and didn't interact much with his teammates. Like, what was he like as a young guy kind of coming up before he left Boston?
I think that the best way to describe him is there was a maturity that lacked, but it's understandable when you're a guy who is that talented. So much is expected of him. He's gone through a medical catastrophe with a testicular cancer. Mm-hmm. He's put in the forefront. And if you know his personality, he doesn't embrace it. And you know, the funny part is we always want athletes to to kind of step back and have humility. And we like the guys that have the personality, but we're not always accepting of the guys that don't embrace and do what we want them to do. And I say we as in media and fans. Mm-hmm. And you got to accept that sometimes guys just aren't cut out for it. So I think for Phil, when he was in Boston, we all knew his talent. I think we all had a vested interest in trying to help him along. And that was a tough process because when you are so talented as he is, sometimes, and it's understandable, like I didn't have it. I had to gut my way out. You have a process by which you've conducted yourself so very long, and you don't like to deviate from it. So it's not necessarily that you're stubborn. It's not necessarily you don't want to listen or you want to take the advice. You just know your success over time has come from this pattern of behaviors, this level of success, these good habits, and so sometimes it's hard to break. But the great part was guys like Recky coming into the lineup who have had that success and can impart what it takes. You need a certain personality in the locker room sometimes to get a certain guy. It's not always the leader, right? Zeke can't always talk to a kid that maybe Zeke can't relate to, mm-hmm. or the guy can't relate to Zeke. You got to find someone else in that locker room to do it. And that's why you have to have a good core of veterans to maybe say, hey, this guy's mine. I'll take it over.
Was it pretty unique in that sense when you were there? Rex, when he got there, Thorny, Ferentz, there were a lot of players, it seemed like to me, in that
Shane Knighty.
Yeah, exactly.
DJ Axelson. And I will tell you, Marco Sturm. So it wasn't guys that were – people always think, like, veterans are the guys that come in because they have a presence and maybe they're past their prime. That was a great part about that team. A lot of these guys, like PJ Axelson's defensively, for me, was incredible. I couldn't get over how – sound defensively. He was like my favorite guy as a defenseman because I knew if I screwed up and Axie was on the ice, somehow he'd find his way. But you had a collection of guys that were not only veteran in status and had come from so many different circumstances. Like, so Knights played in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and that was a tough go. I had played in Detroit, and I had a different experience with so many veterans who were all going to the Hall of Fame. You had guys at different stages in their career. But collectively as a group, we put our heads together. And I will tell you, in my second full year, but my third year there, that's how we found that success. Every guy had a place, and we were all accepting. And it also established an abnormal tightness amongst the guys. We wanted to be together. Most guys go to the rink, and they have their favorite one or two, and they kind of, it's not clicky, but they stick to it. The veterans across the board, 10 guys at a time, we all were around each other.
What were your thoughts on Claude? Like, just now kind of observing him, your time there, do you think he's any different as a coach now than he was then, and just the dynamic of playing for him?
Well, I don't want to speak for him, but I will tell you a good story about Claude Julien. Is when I got traded, and I don't think that when Claude came in, I would have been his prototypical player. And I don't think when Claude came in, he would have been my favorite coach. I am, based on your knowledge of my personality, a kind of happy-go-lucky, fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants, not always within the mold of a hockey player. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, even as a veteran, I learned so much from Claude, and even more, I appreciated what I learned from him after I left. And Claude actually sent me an email when I got traded, which shocked the crap out of me that it came from him. Because he did. He said a lot of nice things, and it was the first email I've ever got. I mean, you got to imagine, I played for Scotty Bowman, who part of his forte was keeping guys on edge, and that was part of his success, right? Is you never felt comfortable. And I felt a little bit like that with Claude because I couldn't read it. But that email was great personally. And I will tell you that having kind of stepped back from the game, I appreciate Claude Julien so much more because we butted heads, guaranteed. He didn't like my conditioning at times, I know. But I also proved to him that there can be skinny fat guys, there can be slightly chubby guys, but it doesn't dictate whether or not your stamina is there. And maybe I taught him something there. Maybe I taught him sometimes that seriousness in the locker room in times of dire circumstances doesn't always show itself to be fruitful. Maybe lighthearted sometimes. But I will tell you that I think Claude is adapted. You don't succeed as a coach over this time and maintain a job for so long if you don't learn to adapt. And you have to look at the game from a different perspective. We're always, you know, we have to look at it not only from this structural side of, we have to adopt analytics now because that matters. We have to adopt certain training practices, but you also have to adapt to the new generation of player. The generation of player that I came in as is completely different from the guys just 5 years later. There's a different language. There's a different element that pushes their buttons. So the coach has to adapt. And the biggest endorsement is he still got his job, right? So he came there in 08?
Yep. 07, 08, yeah.
07, 08. There are so many guys that have come and gone, and he, whether or not he has a successful season, what you do know in the end is he's got a successful approach, and he's got his locker room. And I played for coaches who have just maintained their status quo, and there's no adapting. I'll give you Randy Carlyle. There's a reason Randy Carlyle went from here to here to here to here, because quickly you wear out your welcome if that message doesn't fit the locker room. You don't have to completely change, but you have to adapt. And I think Claude Julien's done a great job.
You think it's important to have guys like you, like Sean Thornton, certain veteran personalities in there maybe to, you know, not necessarily push back on him, but to let him know when, hey, maybe it's time to lighten up a little bit and sort of a veterans to give him the message like, well, hey, maybe you need to back off a little?
I do, but I think that I don't want to overestimate my influence in the locker room. It was Zdeno Chara's locker room.
Yep.
It was Claude Julien's locker room. And so where I think our role came in was a sounding board with Z. And I do remember a circumstance. I'll give you a story where, so I would say in terms of the lighthearted guys, you had myself, the Thornton, the 90, Sturmey was kind of easy, happy-go-lucky, mm-hmm. PJ. Z, and it's a credit to his success, is very between the lines. He's going to make the Hall of Fame. He's a fantastic player. But in terms of the locker room sometimes, you had to go to a guy if you felt comfortable and say, hey, this can't happen. So here's our example. We played in Toronto one night, and we got to drive to Buffalo. And we're not all excited because we got to go to Buffalo. We all wanted to... Toronto,
of course,
or Buffalo. So we drive there, and that's Claude's idea because he wants to get there. He wants to practice. We all want to practice in Toronto, likely hungover the next morning, and just go to Buffalo for the game. But no. So as we go, we had somehow an early game in Toronto. So we're coming into Buffalo, I'd say about 10:15, and on the bus we talked about. I think we might have had a dry stretch, and we just want we had a tough game against Toronto. We did have a tough game against Toronto. And as we pull up to the hotel, Claude stands up at the front of the bus and says, curfew's at 11. We're like, we don't play till much, but we're thinking, we're not saying. And because we talked about a need to get it back in the rails, in the back of the bus with all these veterans, we talked to Z, we're all going to go watch a UFC fight tonight. We're going to find a place. The entire team's going to hang out. There's nobody can choose to go anywhere else. If you're going out, you're going as a team. And in the moment, it was like an old Western. Because as Claude's at the front of the bus, Z's at the back of the bus and stands up all 6'9" of them and says, no. And we're like, oh. We're like, oh, my God, here we go. But it wasn't done disrespectfully.
Right.
Because he followed up the no and said, Claude, I think that we've had some problems. I'm the captain. I'm going to take responsibility for all these guys. If anything goes wrong, it's on my name. These guys better respect me because I'm taking it. And so they had an exchange in the bus, and Claude could have taken that as, you're challenging my authority. But it was the group of guys that had gone through a lot that maybe had it's not a finally moment, but had made sense to Z where he stood up for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that went far for Z because we all respected. He took an opportunity and a chance to make that decision that could have negatively impacted him. And he stood up for a team. And guess what? We went on Buffalo, we killed him.
Mm-hmm. How much did you enjoy Z as a teammate, as a guy you played with on a pairing with for most of your time there? And, you know, what did you kind of learn about him as a man and as a player during your time?
I know that I gave him fits, right? So I was the polar opposite. You know, in the movie Twins, there's Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito?
Let me guess, you were Schwarzenegger, right?
No, I'm definitely not Schwarzenegger. I'm the guy that you look at and you look down and I'm like, this guy just doesn't fit. But what I was, I would tell you honestly, at a time where I come off a tough situation in New York, and I don't hide it. Those were the worst 6 months of hockey in my life. I sucked. And people in New York hate me, which is fine. And I struggled in that environment, in that circumstance. I had an opportunity for a rebirth. And I wasn't exactly screwed on straight when I got there. I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? Because when I got to Boston, they weren't doing well. Mm-hmm. Z got me on my path, right? And I got an opportunity to play with him as a partner. And I learned, even at, 35, around that age, 35, I still was learning from Z. But I also think Z learned from me, right? I used to give him fits because we had these set face-offs. He'd line up, and he was intense. The face-off's going to drop, and I had to look for a signal. Well, you know what I'm doing. I'm looking around. Until you drop the puck, the play's not started. I'm looking around. So he'd lose his ever-loving mind, and he'd get really serious. But we had that kind of unifying effect. I got more focused, more tight in my game, and he got a little off the intensity, and we worked well. And in fact, I got to tell you, one of the most endearing or the biggest endorsement I got that was not having won something as a team was I was over in Germany for Marco Sturm's retirement game. And Z said in front of a crowd that one of the biggest reasons he won the Norris the year he did was because he had me as a partner. And I was like, oh my God, that's like, there's not many more things that can be said. And so we got talking about it and talked about, I did do a little adapting of my game to allow him to be who he was, right? So he could be more offensive. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I was leading the Masters combined in a minus career 72. And I knew Z was a plus, so I'll piggyback off those coattails any day. Mm-hmm. But it was a mutually beneficial relationship. Not parasitic, but it was mutually beneficial. We worked well together. And I hope that from some of my experience and influence and our friendship at the time that he maybe took some of those things and kept it as part of him.
No surprise. Obviously, they're still going now as he approaches 40 this season. And, partially because of the Bruins defenseman situation, but also because Chara has been able to keep his play at a certain level. He's still the number one guy there.
Well, I mean, you look at – so the funny thing is somebody asked me, he goes, like, what happened? How did Team Europe go that way? Well, their decor as a whole during the World Cup rapidly ascended. They improved quite quickly. And I would tell you, if you watch the way Z played, almost so went the game, right? So the forwards had a little more gust to their game. It solidified it. And so I would tell you that for me, I think Z has perhaps adapted his game a little more. You know, he's taking less control of the game, maybe trying not to, I don't know the best way to put it, but I think he's learning that as the game evolves, so does he. He's been so in a position forever of straight up dictating it. And maybe now as he gets older, he has to adapt a little more and dictate less.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the Bruins in general from what you've seen of them here in the first few weeks? Obviously, it's tough right now with both goalies out and, Backes out and some injuries there. But, you know, what were your thoughts on them over the summer, what they did, and then what they've done the first few weeks of the season?
Well, I like what they've done, but I think the tough situation is, I mean, you can only judge. We're a very what have you done for me lately society, and so you come out with 3 wins to start the season, and now I think it's 4 straight losses. The glaring beacon of light, it's screaming, is you are now enduring what Montreal did last year without Price. You cannot start a season because you have not formed your identity. A team is not in a position to withstand some of these pressures early on in the season when you miss your goalie because you don't know who you are yet. You're still trying to establish this. Teams don't respect you quite yet for what you have. You haven't solidified who you are. And you got some guys that are kind of coming into the lineup. And I know, like, so we talked about Ziso, Carlo's in there. You've got some guys who are assuming different roles. I mean, I see more of Pasternak on the ice, exerting, pushing himself from the game. But I wouldn't say he's in a position right now of being the most veteran. You're looking still to the guys of Bergeron, I am more of a believer in Marchand than ever. I was always a guy like, you know, he's a guy kind of, I'm not comparing him to Avery, but had that element where he has, like, Marchand by far has a skill set different than Avery. But Avery, once he was gone. And I watched early in Marchand's career when he would snap, reining him in was so tough. Now I think that he has got a perfect balance between irritating and playing his game. I would say for me, right, as I watch the World Cup and I watch the way he plays, that he is a top 10 player in the National Hockey League right now.
Do you think the Bruins have enough defenseman-wise to survive and to get into the
Think they know.
Yeah.
I don't think they know, right? So McQuaid just came back. I think that was his first game.
Second game. He struggled
second
in both
game.
Of them.
For me, it was his first game.
Yeah.
And if you're missing a goalie, what you have to have is the next level has to be a solid decor. Now, you've got young guys. So you got Carlo. You've got Lyles, who came in, who's a veteran. You got Z. And you got McQuaid coming in here. You got Krug, who I love.
Yep.
But if you don't have yet an established decor with that identity, we go back to it again, you can't mask the problems. And in the last two games, there's no better example than the way they played. I mean, the way I would describe that game, the two last two games, is phlegmy. Phlegmy because they coughed up so much.
Yeah.
Whether it was possession of the puck and straight up gave it away, had it taken away, or things like the goal where Vesey gets it last night and Pastrnak literally was taking tickets to the door watching them go by. Like, the defenseman can't be everywhere. And there were so many mistakes around the net that usually a decor that's relaxed, taking the game as it comes, knows what they're doing and feels confident, can handle that. Too early, too much changing, too much going on. So I'm not of the opinion the sky's falling. I do believe they have to tighten it up. I mean, there's some basics not getting done, and that doesn't fall on the coach, right? The coach gives you your system. He motivates you, but to implement and execute, that's on the players. And for me, I'm watching. That's straight up execution. I mean, that's why I'm not worried about the Bruins.
The question is, so you're not worried. You don't think they potentially need an upgrade there, or need, you know, a veteran top four kind of guy that can move the puck, or somebody, you know, that can play in all situations. And I know it's hard to get
that's
those guys.
Everybody. Right. I mean, that's everybody. Right. So you look at what you have, and maybe it's working with. Maybe it's working with pairings. Maybe they change the pairings and try and move it around. I mean, the crazy part for me is that they've got a big deal between McQuaid, Carlo, Chara. I mean, Carlo, what, is 6'5"?
Yeah, 19 years old. Yep.
19 years old.
Yeah.
He's a plus defenseman still, even with the last two games. He's getting his points. Averaging, like, this is the crazy part for me, is D-Core is a maturity position. Very few guys just step in, right, and just straight up play it with ease. He's playing 22 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to ask a 19-year-old to play 12 to 14. So, I mean, there's a good sign there. It's I think the panic comes in if you really have to start searching and mortgaging. I mean, I know Hampus Lindholm's out there. I don't think the cap space is there, and I don't think the return is there. So I think that's out of the question. It's not available. I think you have to take a look if you're gonna make a change closer to December, if you know a team's completely out of it and they're thrown in the towel.
I saw your tweet about Tuks not too long ago. Are you concerned that this is a fairly serious injury with him? Do you think it's something that could affect him for a long term? Like, what exactly do you know about what's going on with him?
What I heard was it was left leg, that it was at first hamstring, and then I was told it was possibly hamstring, groin.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're always concerned when you're a goalie and it's your legs, right? So it's the push off. And the crazy part was, in the opening game, they played Columbus, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
That was when he initially
shot.
Heard it.
Yep. And you saw it on video. Shot came from the same spot. The shot missed the net, went wide. The next time he injures it, shot came from the same spot, goes wide, and he's in the exact same position wincing. So, I think they're smart, rather than trying to play a guy who's 90, 80, 70, whatever he is, to just get it over with. Endure the short-term pain for long-term gain, and that's having Rask in there. And there's no greater endorsement to keep him out than seeing what you're seeing, giving up six goals. You need a healthy guy to let the rest of the team settle.
Yeah, the only problem is, I guess, you know, you can't win the Cup in October and November, but you can certainly get yourself out of contention if you're bad enough in those first few months. And they're in a stretch right now where they're playing good teams. So I know internally with the Bruins, there's some pressure to, you know, now that they've seen Subban just implode again for the second time in two NHL starts. And I thought McIntyre was okay last night. He had a couple of mistakes, but he wasn't.
Well, he had a couple of mistakes, but I mean, there's no reason for guys to be that open.
Mm-hmm.
For Nash to be sitting off the side for the first goal for that long, for the next goal to happen and have a guy that open for that long. I mean, you can fault a young guy for not making the robbery save, and then you can fault a guy for not making the easy save, but honestly, you can't give a National Hockey League team on a young guy that many opportunities. Usually it works the other way. It has a mental effect on your team where they rally together, they tighten it up, they play for a young guy. And it's a positive effect both in the team, because they know they've got a different focus, and the young guy realizes, oh, I got help. I should feel calm now and play my game.
Wrapping things up here, just get your favorite Toucher and Rich story from all your times doing fundraisers with them, doing you know, shows with them, and your interactions with them.
I think I'll give them credit. I always, you know, I've done radio before. Prior to Toucher and Rich, actually, that's probably one of the reasons why Scotty hated me in Detroit was I embraced the fun of the game, right? So it's one thing to play the game. It's great. It's fun to talk the game. And so I did that. But I got to Boston. And when it was first introduced to me by Matt Chimera, like, hey, listen, go talk to these guys. I think I went in for in studio the first time. And I'm like, these guys are nuts.
Yeah.
And then they're like, then the Bruins, because obviously at that time Celtics were bad, but they still had more attraction back mm-hmm. then than we did. Sox and Patriots. So we were number four or tied for third for attention. When they said, let's do it with this guy, I was like, oh, geez. So my favorite story is the entire experience, right? So I have a threshold. And once I hit my threshold, I get nervous and I'm like, I don't know how to answer it. Those guys kicked me over my threshold and down the mountain so many times. And the funny part is I enjoy making other people uncomfortable. I like to see the visceral reaction, what you can get out of them. That was honestly in a public forum, the first time where I literally went to practice saying, who the hell asks a question like that? And then I know, like, based on my reaction, either I shut up or I went with it. Am I going to get in trouble for going with it? Or am I going to get brutalized because everybody knows because I shut up, I had something to hide. And so that was the fun of it, right? And I formed a relationship, which was weird, for the first time with a group of guys where I felt comfortable that they would push the buttons, but they wouldn't take it too far, that I knew there was a line I couldn't cross, but we also had a good outside. Like, we started cuts for a cause, mm-hmm. and those guys got behind it. And so I would tell you that I would give them credit for helping to really establish a viable rapport with players. They were really good at bringing players and their personalities to people. And that was the fun part. So the best stories would be not being at the rink and seeing some guy who did whatever job, whether it be corporate or whatever, the whole scale, who I could relate to because they had a story. Oh, I heard you on Touch and Rich. I can't. And that would spark it. And it was so much fun. And that's what I say when I started talking about, I got to go on an experience in Boston where we took a team from the low level and it started going higher and higher. And it wasn't the idea where most athletes are like, I run the joint. I never thought I ran Boston. What I did was I was on the same ride as every fan in Boston, realizing something good's happening here. So those guys are great. The tough part though, now when I'm in media and I have to have, and the word's not integrity, but I have to have that line. I'm like, they're like toxic. I can't, like, he's asked me a couple times, like, dude, I can't do it. I'll get fired because, you know,
right.
I represent this company now. And if I go on and start talking about, you know, guys and girls on the road, I'm like, I'm dead. I mean, those are things I can't say anymore.
Yep, that's why they don't get people after their playing careers. They get them right when they're forced to go over there with the Bruins. Big credit to you, Wardo, for starting that Cuts for a Cause. It's still going on.
Oh, thanks.
Going on strong with Patrice Bergeron now, running things in Boston with Toucher and Rich, and keeps getting bigger and better every year. It was great to see you, my friend, and take care down there in Carolina.
All right, thanks.
All right, Murph, let's move on to the interactive portion of the Great American Hockey Show podcast. We're going to answer Twitter questions. Abby at Abby Teitelbaum asks, who is playing goal if both guys are up with the bees? If soreness doesn't go away, does next guy get a chance to play with bees? Well, I think as long as it's the two young guys, I saw enough out of Zane McIntyre against the Rangers to think he deserves the call over Malcolm Subban. He had a couple of goals that were, you know, his fault, sloppy technique. He was off the post, and Kevin Hayes was able to shoot a puck off the back of his leg and into the net. And he also came way out of the net for that carom off the end boards that Brandon Perry was able to stuff in. But I thought from a competitive standpoint, from a battling standpoint, from a making some great saves standpoint behind a shoddy defense, Zane McIntyre was much better against the Rangers than Malcolm Subban was the night before against Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like we said, there's a problem with the defense in front of him, and clearly that fell apart at the seams again.
Torrey Krug is not a penalty killer, Murph. I think we learned that last night against the Rangers.
I think we definitely learned that, you know, and hey, at least he holds himself accountable, unlike the rest of them. But, you know what, I think Zane McIntyre definitely showed a little more poise. His positioning was way better than Subban, and I'd agree with you for now. I mean, he's got to be their choice as backup. The question is, you know, who's the starter? Because I don't know if he can hold the reins and maintain the starter's position if Tuukka's going to be out for a while.
And Scott Deltonic, at Scott Deltonic, asks, has anyone seen a Bruin not on the first line, actually in the offensive zone? Hashtag not including Dominic Moore. Well, Austin Zarnik scored last night, so we did see it last night. But, I mean, this is, and you mentioned it off the top of the show, huge concern that nobody aside from David Pastrnak, Patrice Bergeron, and Brad Marchand is doing anything offensively for the Bruins. David Krejci looks like a shell of himself. Matt Bolesky and Jimmy Hayes, there's going to be an APB out for the two of them because they've both been completely invisible. Hayes more than Bolesky. At least Bolesky's thrown his body around a little bit. But he also did take the bad penalty last night that led to the game-winning goal. The fourth line's been okay, but they need so many forwards to step up right now. Just like they need the defense to step up behind these rookie goalies.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And, you know, it's interesting. We keep seeing people say, why do they keep playing Hayes? Why do they keep rolling him out there? Why do they keep giving him a chance? Well, who else are they going to give a chance right now? I mean, really, Joe, who's out there? You know, like, who's there for them to put in there? I know they've got some young kids, but they've had some injury issues, obviously, with Akari taking the hit the other night, and then Zarnik was hurt for a bit, and, you know, Danton Heinen, I don't think, has really done anything when he's been given the shot.
No.
So, it's, again, personnel. It keeps going back to the personnel and the depth they have and the way they utilize it. And I just think that there needs to be, you know, we can't talk about this now because it's midseason. It's never going to happen. But there just needs to be a complete overhaul. And we're going to keep going back to this personnel issue throughout the season.
Yeah. And, you know, this is also looking at the roster and that David Backes signing over the summer that the Bruins were so happy about. And, you know, I like the guy. I think he's got a very good leader. He's an intense player. I think he's going to be able to help them when he's healthy. But we're already seeing old man injuries. I mean, bursitis in your elbow where you need the bursa sacs removed. And, you know, that's a wear and tear injury after playing for lots of years. And now he's going to be out potentially, you know, a couple weeks because of that right at this point in time when everything else is going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a sure sign of a player that's played like 800 plus games in the NHL, has logged a lot of heavy miles, and is going to get less and less effective and more injury prone and less the player that he was at his best with the St. Louis Blues. And this is why I didn't understand the signing of him to a team that should be looking to go youth and really turn things over rather than going the Sindenesque route and paying an aging player, free agent, too many years and too much money.
Yeah, and if you're going to spend that money, put it on the blue line.
Right.
Because I'll tell you right now, if let's say David Backes was a defenseman and that's what they put their money into and that was their big free agent signing, and he gets hurt right now, all right? There's a lot more in terms of depth there, like talent, that they could have brought up. Young guys that we know are eventually going to be good on the blue line that could be getting playing time right now. They don't need, the Bruins don't need a guy to come up on forward position right now. They have enough depth there, and that wasn't an issue there, and they didn't focus on their main issue, and that's the defense. And that money's, like you said, he's here for a while, and they're locked into that, and they might have to deal with these type of injuries with him for a long time.
Old man injuries, Murph. I get them. You get them. David Backus.
I haven't had the elbow one yet.
I haven't had my elbow drained or bursa sacs removed, but I'm just saying in general.
I've had other things drained.
in general, the old man injuries are already hitting us, just like they're hitting David Backus. All right, final tweet. Ray Guarino, at Ray Guarino. There's obviously a talent issue on the blue line and depth issue up front. Now Claude seems lost. Are we the new Whalers?
I wish the Bruins were the Whalers. At least they'd have a good theme song.
And they'd be playing in a mall. What could be better than that?
Yeah, what's better than that? Come on.
All right, Murph. Thank you very much, my friend. Always a good time with you. That'll wrap it up for this week's Great American Hockey Show podcast. Thanks to Aaron Ward-Wardo for his candor and his good humor on with us as a guest. Always love another good Irishman on the podcast. So for now, we're going to move on and keep it great. Keep it American, and always, always keep it about hockey. See you guys.